Blog Talk Radio.
Their great victory, and I got to tell you, by the way, that's the wrong opening. But I'll have to call the network and ask them why they put that on. But that's okay; we won't ask them. We'll just carry on. So that pretty much is what the Buffalo Bandits fans were doing, as well as the Calgary team. Yes, the Roughnecks. Boy, oh boy, did those two games. Well, yes, you could say the Rock game wasn't as close. It really was, and taking it from three Rock fans who are here together right now. We're waiting for Rocco, who is not a Rock fan, to let us know he has time to be on the air, and if he does, we'll call him and have him join in. It's kind of funny that he's not a Rock fan. You'd think a guy named Rocco would be a Rock fan.
But
I don't know. I just thought I'd say that. So there we sat through the game with Toronto Rock being visited by the Buffalo Bandits, a situation that at the beginning of the year, before anything, before a ball was fought for, before a faceoff was had, would have made sense. It would have made sense that Buffalo would meet Toronto. And I'm not saying it was inevitable. I'm just saying it would have made sense at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, the year went on, and as it went on, it looked like Buffalo was going to run away with first, and Rochester, of course, the defending champions, we knew they'd always be in the hunt, and there's no way they would have slipped down to third just by virtue of the talent they have. So, you know, the fact that Buffalo ended up visiting Toronto for the semifinal game in the East was only a surprise because of the way the season started. But still, you know, I hate to pull a Don Cherry here, because I really don't like when he does that, because he picks from a whole bunch of things that he says and then just picks the one that fits that week. But I got to say this. It bothered me from the beginning of the season, and you guys are my witnesses. The faceoffs were a problem in my mind from almost day one, two, or three. Game one, two, or three. By the third game, you guys know how concerned I was about face-offs. And that is, you know, among other things that we could pick at why the Buffalo team won. Especially because they were very good. They had the goaltending. The goaltending, Cosmo, didn't let them down. They played a great team game. Their offense, winning face-offs, loose balls. They didn't get carried away with penalties. Have I covered most of it? You guys want to jump in? Aaron, you first, I guess. You know, and the face-offs to me were the ones that bothered me the most, because that was a problem they had from the very beginning of the season, and I was hoping they'd iron that out, and they did not.
I think the one most telling statistic to me out of the game between Toronto and Buffalo was the fact that we didn't win a single face-off in the second half. Not one. Jay Thornburg was absolutely on fire, going 27 out of 32 for an 84% face-off win percentage. And when the opposing team starts with the ball that often, it's going to be a problem. You know, part of the reason why Benesch ended up with 7 goals and 3 assists. You know, Stainhouse had a 1-5 night. Tavares only went 2-2. But when Benesch goes 7-3, you know, and Stainhouse goes 1-5, and they split the rest of the scoring up pretty evenly amongst they're better players, that's always going to be an issue. I mean, Colin Doyle had a great night. But the fact that we couldn't win a faceoff to save our lives in the second half is probably what did us in more than anything else.
Gary?
I was kind of wondering if the defense was still sitting at Bedalis. Where did it go on that night? When you're leaving Benesch alone in front of the net 3 consecutive times for 3 consecutive goals, and then we're arguing with the referees, maybe we should be yelling at the defense to wake up a little bit, because that's inexcusable.
Yeah, but you know, Gary, though, I got to say this. I mean, you have to agree that it is difficult at best for a defense to always be on their back. On their, you know, they were under attack. You know, this is the whole thing that I dislike about not winning a faceoff. You know, like Aaron said, they didn't win a single faceoff in the second half. You know, when you think of the turnover rate of their possession and goals, they had a great turnover rate in that game. You understand what I'm saying? It's hard.
Sure. My point is, Frank, how do you let people behind you in front of the crease?
They're tired.
You're standing on the edge of the crease so people can't get behind you. The breakdowns were inexcusable.
I get you. I agree with you. Believe it or not, we're agreeing with each other. You're discussing the symptom, and I think what I'm trying to do, and I might not be right, but I think I'm referring to the disease. The disease is they can't win a face-off to save their life. So every time the ball is in question, in other words, who has possession, every time the ball is in question, it's pretty horrible if you never get it. That's, you know, for every time that Buffalo had possession, I don't think they had a better conversion rate than the Rock. The problem I have, and right now we don't have him. I'll try him again.
No, he's still umpiring. He just sent a message over Facebook saying I'll let you know when
Okay, yeah, he said he's still in the seventh inning. Oh, my apologies. Yeah, no, Gary, I agree with you. The defense could have played better, but the help would have been if the defense would get a rest. There's nothing worse that tires the defense.
Here's my other point. How deflating is this? You battle back from behind. You get a lead, and 5 seconds later, you give up an easy goal. How deflating is that for everybody who just worked heck to get all these things back, and then you let an easy one slip by? Not once, not twice, a few times.
You're right about that.
And then you can see it on the bench, just guys just kind of looking up and looking around. That can't happen all game long.
That all goes back, but Gary, it still
comes,
all
comes around
back.
Continually.
But that all goes back to the amount of possession you have. Defenses have to work a lot harder than offenses. Offensive plays are easier to, you know, it seems to me anyway, I don't know, the little bit I know about sports, being on offense is a lot less tiring than being on defense. That's all I'm trying to say. And because defense requires you to move more than the other guy, I think, because the other guy is leading you somewhere and trying to fool you into going a different direction. So I believe the defense was tired. You're totally right. The defense looked terrible. I am not for a second going to suggest that the Rock defense didn't look good.
Here's another point. You have your oldest guy on the team and your youngest guy on the team stepping up. Then you have a lot of invisible. You know, Steph LeBlanc, barely noticed him on the floor. Sanderson, barely noticed him on the floor. Colin Doyle was a monster. Nick Dechenko, a monster. These things are things that make me scratch my head, too. Where did everybody else go?
I think the thing that bothers me the most are the 8 minutes that Jesse Gamble took and the 6 minutes that Damon Edwards took in penalties that were just unnecessary.
Well, that 5 minute by Damon, I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah.
Frustration took over on that one.
Again,
but if you
the
put yourself in the moment,
out.
The game is the game, right?
And again, that's another reason why the defense gets stressed out a little bit, gets physically worn out. And you know, the trouble with being physically tired, it creates mental issues as well. And you know what? They played a great game for the most part. Again, they repeated the problem they had all year where they would hit a dry spell, Aaron, you know, and they would stick on that dry spell and not get off the schneid. That's one of the biggest problems they had this year was the consistent good play. They couldn't muster it, you know, for a full, you know, game. They do it in stretches, not consistently. And I think this game was pretty much – this goes all the way back to the last game last year. It's basically more the same. And I know it's frustrating for big-hearted guys like Gary who love his team, and maybe I don't love The Rock as much as Gary, and I don't know where you fit in that category. I'm finding it a little easier to be, how can I put it, not harsh, but less burnt by what happened that day. I'm trying as hard as I can to be objective, and it's hard because when you see things happen that you can predict going wrong, that's one thing. But when you can't see, like Gary's saying, where are the guys that brought you there? You know, were they not invited to the dance? You know, because it sure seemed like there weren't many people on the dance floor. That's for sure. I agree with Gary on that score.
See, and again, you know, we're talking about, you know, it sounds like they lost 21-3. It was a 15-13 game, and it was 14-13 with things going the Rock's way to try and tie it. And then, again, another penalty with under a couple of minutes to go.
Yeah, 3 minutes, I think it was.
5 seconds later, it's 15-13, and we'll see you in the parking lot. So, again, in the moment, you know,
Well, you know what's really difficult? And I know both of you will agree with me on this one. What's really hard is when you can't change the score, when you can't have an impact on the score, when you care about the team as much as you guys do, as much as we do, it can be very frustrating when you, it's like seeing something. It's right there. You just can't reach it. But you know what? Let's talk about the season a little bit and then move on again to the game. We've still got the other game, which we watched at Joe's.
Yep.
And it turned into a barn burner as well, and that is the Western Conference semifinal, which Calgary, the Roughnecks, and the Colorado Mammoth had, and the Mammoth came up with a mammoth effort. They basically scared the bejesus out of the Calgary team, didn't they?
Oh, they did, and they earned every stripe of it. They left it on the floor. They have nothing to hold their heads down about. They put everything into that, and just, you know, it was an overtime, you know, sudden victory kind of thing, and it went in. But, you know, a little luck the other way, and we'd be talking about how the upset of upsets with Colorado beating Calgary would have happened, because Calgary and Colorado put in identical efforts, and the score showed it. They were both back and forth, offensively, defensively. Anybody could have had that game.
I'm dying to see how Edmonton, their game plan may mirror the Mammoth game plan, because the Mammoth figured out a way to stay, you know, keep up with Calgary. You know, as quick as Calgary is, the Mammoth stayed with them, you know, step for step, and kept that game a back-and-forth game. It was amazing how even that game was for almost, well, pretty much the whole game from the parts that we saw and I saw later. It was an incredible game.
Well, the one thing you also have to bear in mind going into the Battle of Alberta this weekend is the fact that Calgary is the only team to have given Edmonton any trouble this season. So that is going to make it additionally interesting, I think.
Which is why I think the Mammoth plan needs to be, it probably was looked at by Edmonton, because the Mammoth did something that Edmonton could not do, and that is defend. You know, the strength of Edmonton all year has been defending, and defending consistently. You know, but they couldn't poke any holes in Calgary, and the Mammoth did, and that's something that that's going to make for a great Western Championship game, and of course the Eastern Championship game will be just as exciting. So Calgary, what do you think the Mammoth did, Gary, specifically that gave them such a good run against Calgary?
Well, I think they started using everybody offensively. They couldn't just key and double and triple team one particular person. They used everybody offensively, and defensively they kept to their system. They didn't let Calgary pull all the things that they normally do, and off the Dolby it goes. They had their lanes blocked. They had their assignments covered. And winning a few faceoffs never hurt either, eh, Frank?
I'm sorry?
And winning a few faceoffs never hurt either.
Yeah, okay. I was in the middle of sneezing when you said that.
Bless you.
I had my my mic off. Yeah, you know, again, you know, ball possession in lacrosse is identical. There is absolutely, in my mind, no difference in ball possession in lacrosse as there is in basketball. It is imperative for you to get possession of the ball every time you can, because you know what's like, if you guys just like, without knowing for sure, and I without knowing for sure, if I said to you that 50% of your possessions lead to goals, would that be a fair number?
Yes, I think that'd be a very fair number.
Oh, definitely.
Aaron?
Yeah, I definitely think so. 50% actually does sound very fair.
So if you score, you get the ball 50% of the time, and then you get the ball 100% of the time, and the other team doesn't get it, there's a good chance you're not going to score as much as the other team. There's a really good chance. And that's just as simple as I look at it. If you can't possess the ball, if you don't have guys that can steal the ball, and like, you know, and this I think is why Gary feels the pressure was on the defense to perform, because they're the last line of defense. If a team has possession of the ball, the only way to take possession is to remove it from them, to take it from them. Now, when you know they're already going to score around 50% of the time, you'd like to at least, you know, a quarter of the time try to get that, you know, that 25% where you get the ball back somehow. But, you know, steals are not that prevalent in lacrosse. You pretty much, the only time you get the ball back is when the clock runs out or the guys can't get a shot off, which is, again, the clock runs out. But, you know, you can't depend on that for very long. And Calgary did a great job, as usual, you know, playing a complete game. And I think that is what's going to give Edmonton trouble. Edmonton, I think, looks for a weakness, and they play towards the other team's weakness. And if they give one, because defensively they're just so strong, their offense doesn't need to work that hard. And that's the kind of defense that the Rock didn't play, that Edmonton will play against Calgary. And I agree with you that the defense didn't look that good for the Rock, Gary. I really do. But, you know, Now you've got this game here where Edmonton is going to be playing Calgary, and Calgary pretty much dominated Colorado during the season. They finished much higher than Colorado in the standings, yet the difference was insignificant. One goal, one, you know, in overtime. That's just amazing.
Yeah, I agree with you, Frank. I agree with you totally.
Aaron?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I wish you wouldn't call me sir. You make me feel old. Okay, you make me remember I'm old. How's that? You know, there's the thing of being at the game and being up. You're in the press box, you know, and you're a fair distance away, which enables you to see a lot more of the floor at once. From your perspective, What were the things with that full view of the game, and when, you know, the first half, second half, what kind of play was taking place beneath you that was very noticeable on your part, and how soon were you concerned about the outcome?
Just based on the way I could see plays developing on the floor. Obviously, I was concerned right off the hop when the Bandits went on the 4-1 run and ended up closing out the first quarter with a 4-2 lead. The problem I noticed is that the Rock defense appeared to be weak backside, which means that a lot of the times Brandon would have to go all the way across the net. That was an issue for me. The Bandits also seemed to get a lot of traffic in front, and there were a lot of guys, for some reason, that just seemed to be available. And I'm not sure how that's supposed to happen when you're playing a man-on-man defense. I mean, for the guys that were getting most of the assists for Buffalo, you wouldn't expect them to key on them and try to smother them out and double-team them. But that's, you know, the way it looked to me. I got really nervous right at the start. I'll be honest with you, really nervous at the start of the fourth quarter when Buffalo popped those two goals in the first minute and 15 seconds. Just to jump out to that 12-10 lead, I kind of realized, you know what, we're playing soft. We're not pushing chances in the offensive zone. A lot of the time it seemed outside, outside, outside. Colin Doyle would try to butt wiggle his way in. Ball goes back outside, circles the horn again. Weak shot from the outside just to try to make sure that they could renew the shot clock, but then no recovery on the loose ball. You know, I mean,
they
Buffalo ended
pretty,
up with 76 loose balls to Toronto 66.
It looked like that to us as well, to me as well, in the stands, where they spent a lot of time running around the perimeter, and they didn't penetrate hardly at all.
Here's the other thing that you and I discussed, Frank, after the game, was it's inexcusable to take it down to that zone and just kill off a 30-second shot clock without getting a shot.
And tossing it into the corner.
And time and time again. At least throw it on the net. Who knows what will happen? You know, get a shot somewhere.
Absolutely.
You're certainly not going to score with it in your stick or it in the corner or rolling it into the corner. Just put it on a net. Good things will happen sometimes. So
like
I found
that
to be something that really kind of, you know, kind of got under my skin a little bit too.
It was painful to watch.
If we can see it in the stands, surely, you know, 10 feet from me on the bench, you can see it too.
Yeah, and you know what? We had, you know, looking at it from our perspective, and that, of course, is because we're pulling for the Rock, and nobody here is trying to con anybody. So, you know, Rocco says he's ready. Well, give me your phone number, buddy. Jays 10, Phillies nothing? Wow.
You got it. Sitting in the eighth with two out. Yep.
Wow. Okay, now he sent me that message. Let him know that to put his phone number up there so that I can call him. You know, it's tough. It's tough when you're watching a game and your team is not doing well. That's great. We've discussed that a little bit. Let's move a little bit now towards the Buffalo fans and how happy they must have been. There wasn't a big crowd. There was a fair-sized crowd of Buffalo fans there. And they were ecstatic. And to look at it from the Buffalo perspective, they came in and did what they needed to do to win. They played a very tight defense. They won as many face-offs as they could, knowing full well that the Rock are weak at that aspect of the game. They converted their possessions in good fashion, and they wore out the defense. They came here with a plan. And I think they executed it well, and I think they deserved the victory over the Rock. They did a marvelous job in the game that they played, guys. And we have to give them credit. You know, Cosmo all year has been an effective goaltender. One by one, Aaron, how would you review the goaltending for Cosmo? What'd you think of his, from your perspective, his play?
He once again proved why he has the most saves in the NLL. He's proved why he is potentially one of the most valuable players in the league and the biggest bang for your buck goalie that's out there. The Rock put 54 shots on him. He only let in 13 goals. The Rock had 14 shots in the first, 16 in the second, 15 in the third, and only 9 in the fourth. But you know what? Even though he had a light workload, relatively speaking, in the fourth quarter, he still came up big when he needed to. So that is proof in the pudding right there. You know, you put that many shots on the boy and he's still keeping you guys in the game like that. That's, you know, something that can't be denied. I mean, there's a reason why he's as valuable as he is and why he started for them all season.
Conversely, it can't be said, in my opinion, and Gary, first you with Cosmo. Tell us your opinions of Cosmo.
Cosmo, all season long, has been doing this. He's seen more rubber than anybody in the league by a long shot and has been keeping his team in there. He's the reason why they even made it to the playoffs. He did the same thing on Saturday night. He kept them in tough times. When Toronto was getting momentum, he kept them in that game. Now, conversely, for the first time in 2 months, the Buffalo defense actually played Troy's system. And guess what happened? They made the Toronto offense, with the exception of a couple of plays here and there, obsolete. So if they have any chance against Rochester, they better be following that system to the letter.
Well, they I agree 100% that they played well, and you know, the coaching in that game, there wasn't anything out there that basically said A coach defeated B coach. The coaching really wasn't a factor, because as it's been said a few times in life, if in a playoff game a coach has to coach, then they're dead in the water. You know what I mean? Like, either the players get it by then or not. If they don't get it, they're not going to be around for long. And unfortunately, it appears that the Rock didn't get it, and they're not around now because of it. The goaltending, as far as the goaltending is concerned, Cosmo was very consistent, very secure in the net, didn't get rattled. But, you know, on the other side of the rink, I don't think Miller was really that bad. I think he played a great game, and it wasn't because of him the team didn't win. He gave his team as many chances as he could. There was a run there towards the end, Aaron. I think he made 6 or 7 incredible saves, turned the ball over for his team, and his team couldn't come up with a solitary goal in that run.
Sounds about right.
No, I agree with that totally.
He's
the reason why
it was as close as it was.
Go ahead, Aaron, you first. And then
heart and soul into the game. He really did. You know, he did everything he possibly could to keep Toronto in it. And 57 shots on goal by Buffalo, and you know,
one goal difference.
2 goals, that's it.
2 goals difference, sorry.
3 shots, 2 goals. And that's it, you know. I mean, like I said, he did everything he possibly could to keep them in that game, and they just couldn't finish.
Sadly, yep, they couldn't finish. And the other thing that I liked about his play was, you know, the fact that he made all those saves in succession, how he didn't get frustrated with his team not scoring, to me. He showed no signs of any frustration. He towed the line for the team as much as, you know, as he could under the circumstances. And he really has to be admired for, you know, the way he handled himself. And, you know, if all those wonderful things that come up, if the team had scored a goal here or a goal there, that game would have been much different, because I think they lost momentum and they couldn't get it back.
I think the real heart stopper was the start of the fourth quarter, because when they pumped those 2 fast goals past Miller, I mean, that was pretty much it. That took the wind out of their sails. I mean, they traded goals the rest of the way, but couldn't bring it any closer than a 1-goal differential, and that kills you. So,
yeah, and it did. It did kill them.
And it's the fact that, you know, like, Toronto scores at 309, Buffalo scores at 425. Toronto scores at 1011, Buffalo scores at 1035. Toronto scores at 1108, Buffalo scores at 1150. And that's it. That's all she does. That's all she wrote.
They always had an answer.
They're back. And it's just, but, you know, what's done is done. They played well, just not well enough to win.
Why don't we get a different perspective, one from the outside, you know, in fact, somebody from Philadelphia. And I always wonder this, Rocco, why don't you change your name? Because otherwise people are going to wonder why a guy named Rocco isn't a Rock fan.
I was born and raised in South Philly. That should be enough.
There's the answer.
Well put, Rocco, well put.
You know how many times I've been asked, is that really my real first name?
It's a very normal Italian name.
Yeah, it is. But when you move away from South Philly, you move up into the suburbs, and yeah, a lot of people are like, no, that's not your first name. That's not really your first name. No, it is.
Absolutely it is. So, Rocco, we suffered the indignity that you suffered last week. Just before last week, your team was eliminated from the playoffs. And this week, the Toronto Rock were eliminated from the playoffs, not in similar fashion, but essentially for the same reason. They just weren't good enough. And what do you think was, or review for us, why you think Toronto lost against Buffalo? And take as much time as you like. We've been going for a few minutes.
Why? Wow. Well, you had a Buffalo team that truly had, you could really say, nothing to lose. Losing eight games in a row, if they lost the ninth, okay. It would have been, what, you know, kind of like shrugging the shoulders. Okay, we lost nine in a row. We need to rebuild. As Rock fans know, and you know, Troy Cordingley steps it up in the playoffs. It's a new season. He put it into their heads after the first game of the regular season, which I, you know, said before, when the Wings dominated them 17-13 in the opener back on December 28th. He said that we have to get our heads out of our you-know-what and start playing Bandit Macross the way we need to play. Otherwise, it's going to be a long season and there's not going to be anything to play for. No doubt in my mind, he said the same exact thing, maybe with a little more emphasis to his words, to the team going into this game. And they came out and they didn't allow Toronto to take any type of a lead or get on any type of a run. And, I mean, it didn't help, it didn't hurt Ryan Benesch with 10 points. 7 goals and 3 assists. He seems to always step it up in the playoffs as well, and they just took advantage of every aspect of the game. There was never really a huge run. They made sure that they had the lead at all times. A couple times Toronto did take the lead, but briefly, maybe only for a couple minutes before Buffalo went ahead and, you know, and scored again. Their power play, 4-for-5. Toronto went 3-for-5 on it. So, I mean, they, you know, both teams took advantage of, you know, penalties that were called. But, the, you know, you look at the shots, the Bandits just, you know, really came out in that fourth quarter, 21-9 shots on goal in that last, in the final 15 minutes.
Absolutely.
And out of the 21 shots, 5 of them went in. I mean, you know, you can't, you know, you go in tied at 10, going into the final 15 minutes, you're at home. There's no way you should be allowing 21 shots on your goaltender, which, you know, you had Brandon Miller going the distance. And a lot of people were wondering, why Brandon Miller? Why not Nick Rose? And I was kind of looking at that saying, okay, Brandon's got the experience, but, you know, why would you want to put all that pressure on him? Why not go with, you know, Rosie, who's, you know, kind of been there, you know, with the team. And Aaron, I'm getting your message. Yeah, okay, the Blue Jays beat the Phillies 10-0. I don't care. The Blue Jays are my team. I'm a Blue Jays fan and a Phillies fan, and I was at the game last night.
Well,
we
sent you a pretty good pitcher that helped you do well in the World Series.
Yeah. Well, I had my dream come true back in the 90s when they played each other,
mm-hmm.
when the Blue Jays and the Phillies played each other. So I've been a Jays fan since they came into the league, I believe it was back in 76.
77, sir.
77, okay.
They came in 76, they drafted, the 77 was their first
year. For 77. Right. Yeah. 77 was the first year playing, but they were introduced in 76.
Yep.
Don't test me on baseball knowledge here.
there we go. What we can talk about, the baseball in a little while. But
yeah,
all right. So now you're at the point where quite clearly you feel like we do that the offense was inconsistent for the Rock. And I feel, you know, Gary feels that, just to keep you up to speed where we're going, Gary felt that the defense let the team down. They didn't play well enough. They were too easy to score on. I agree that they were too easy to score on, but I'm going to say it's because they never won a face-off, and they were always on their heels. The defense got ground into the ground, and then they didn't have enough energy at the end, and if you remember in that final quarter where you were talking about all those shots, there were 6 or 7 saves in succession that Miller made that were outstanding, and the Rock could not penetrate Cosmo. And that, to me, was the difference. That one stretch was the game right there. The fact that they could not score on Cosmo in 6 or 7 possessions in a row, And, of course, their goaltender was stopping. The only change of possession was after saves or the clock runs out, you know. And the Rock had very few possessions compared to Buffalo. And I think that's tough in lacrosse.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help matters. Stephon LeBlanc, who had, I believe, it was in the 40s, but goals, 42 or 45 goals, somewhere in that area. He had zero in the game.
And this Gary, that's where you
pipe in. I mean, that's just, you know, he had zero. I mean, your shooter had two, but, I mean, you're looking at your 40-plus goal scorer, not, you know.
I saw more of him at the Jays game today than I did at the Rock game on Saturday.
Rock game, yeah.
You know,
at least he was on target with the opening pitch.
Well, yeah. I think we're changing his name for tonight to Stephon LeBlanc.
Well, if the shoe fits.
Yeah, well, it definitely fit that last game. You know, it's too bad because, you know, reputations and careers are, you know, there's a lot of games in a history for a player or players. And there are so few playoff games, but it seems that those are the games where a player's reputation is created. You know, you may look good, 45 goals in a season, but what people will remember is zero in a playoff game. That's going to hound you. You know, I really do believe that playoff games create a mystique around a player when the players are successful in that regard. And, you know, it just seems like that mystique is being evaded by, you know, by The Rock. Do you think the mystique that Buffalo might have earned themselves in this game against Toronto, guys, do you think, we'll start with Rocco, how do you think it'll stand them against Rochester? And was this victory a blip in their losing streak, or is it something that can help turn the team around? Rocco?
Well, when you're talking about a team going to go up against Rochester with young players that they have, yes, this does help them. It gives them the confidence. They come off an 8-game losing streak. They go on the road, which they have been terrible playing on the road, and they win in Toronto. A tough building to win in just in general, no matter who you are. Okay, they win the game. They control the game. The faceoffs were 84% to 16%. I mean, that's going to give you a lot of extra possessions. But knowing Troy Cordingley, how he coaches and how he even played the game, and I'm sure you guys know it as well, this game was forgotten about the moment they left the locker room. And they were already focusing in on this weekend, first game of the series, the division finals against the Rochester Nighthawks in their own barn. It'll be in Buffalo, the first game. So no doubt they're going to want to carry this into, you know, into that game. They want to keep that momentum going. They just have to be careful, of not allowing Rochester to get on a run, because they have that young talent, and anybody on that team can just start a run. It's just not like a core set of maybe three or four players on this Nighthawk team. So Buffalo is really going to have to tighten up the defense, and they're really going to need to win the faceoffs the way they did against Toronto if they want to get those extra possessions and keep the offense out there a little bit longer.
Well, the difference is, though, Rochester actually has a faceoff guy.
Right. Toronto, that's why I'm saying they need – yeah, they're going to need to try to, you know, to do something. I mean, Thornberry's one of the best in the league, you know, this year. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough battle. So they need to, you know, try to do their best to get that extra possession, or, you know, even put an extra guy back there on defense on the draws if they feel that they may lose, you know, a majority of them, to not allow Rochester to get that extra penetration.
Absolutely.
Because Rochester has a solid D, and they have a solid goaltender, just in case, too. So I think Buffalo's in tough, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. And if Vince gets on his game just the way Cosmo got on his last week, we could be in for a classic. I mean, it could be a single-digit game. You could be looking at a single-digit game, or you could even be looking at a shootout where both goalies are playing outstanding, but the offensive players on both teams are just pulling, you know, rabbits out of their hat with, you know, what they could be doing. I mean, you know, no doubt Johnny Tavares is going to want to put out his best game because, as I talked about on my show last week, and it's been talked about, we don't know what his status is going to be for next season.
Yeah, he'd want to go out on a winning note, especially at home.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing for him not to mention it because then it gives this team a little more motivation, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, Frank, like, you know, I said this past weekend when you were on with me, I would love to see, you know, if he was to announce that he's going to retire, I would like to see him announce it and play one more season. Because I'm sure everybody will agree with me there that he deserves to
have a Derek Jeter kind of
retirement tour.
Farewell tour.
You know? Yeah, a farewell tour for Johnny T. And, you know, he deserves every bit of an ovation from every single fan around. And we know he's not like that. He's not the type to get, you know, to have this kind of fanfare. He just wants to play the game. Because he always said it's not about him, it's about the team, and it's about the game.
Yeah, I agree with his theory, but, you know, he owes it. I don't want to sound like I'm being, negative towards him, because that's the last thing I'm going to do. You know, he owes it to the fans because they love him, you know. And when you love somebody, you want to tell them, right? And it would be great if the fans would get a chance to tell him.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree completely. We just know that he's not, you know, that type to want to, you know, to have a big
he was even reluctant to take the C this year just because, or yet last year, just because he didn't want all that extra attention.
Right. But, yeah, like you know, Frank was saying, he does, you know, deserve, you know, do it, have that.
It's as much for him as it is for the fans.
As it is for the fans.
You know?
Yes.
And that's all I'm trying to say. I mean, you know, if he's listening to this, dude, you owe it to yourself and the fans to give them a chance to say thank you to you and what you've done for the game. There is not a player in the last 20 years that has done more for lacrosse, box lacrosse, not just the National Lacrosse League, but box lacrosse, period, than him. There's nobody.
Right.
I don't know who else. You know, Whipper was in Toronto here, the same kind of, you know, genre, if you will, you know. But, you know, this guy, longevity, my goodness, the definition in lacrosse.
Oh, I agree totally. And Whipper's also been back for other things for the fans. Even this year, for fan appreciation, he was signing autographs in the foyer before coming into the game, as well as going up to the booth to see Aaron. And, you know, he's done a number of things, so he never really left the eye. So we're hoping that Johnny T does that also. Plus, we had ceremonies for him and retirement of jerseys and the Hall of Fame stuff. So let's hope that Johnny T, goes into this.
I think they will. I think he will. And it'll be done to a degree. And as long as the people who want to shower him with love get the chance to do it, it'll be a good thing. Because I happen to think that there's a lot of people out there who want to shower him with the affection that he's earned. And as I said, Aaron, you've had the chance to be up there in the broadcast booth and watch him play. You've followed this a long time. How important is it to you, do you think, to the fans to be able to give him the kind of send-off? And does he deserve the kind of send-off we're talking about?
Frank, I think Aaron just hit me with he got disconnected.
Oh, no. Well, let me reconnect him.
We'll just wait Aaron. Don't worry.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Wow. Yeah, he's been disconnected for about 15 minutes.
Do, 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 do.
Broccoli, you're going to have to take some in Philly. I need a guide from someone who knows. That would be my escape route, too, right?
You know, it's an amazing thing when it comes to the playoffs, how, you know, it almost seems as though it takes on a life of its own, you know. I really enjoyed the game, being there and watching the game and being with the fans and having a great time. You know, this goes towards the appreciation. Aaron's back with us, you know. And Aaron, I was just asking you when you were disconnected from the program. What I was asking was, in your opinion, first of all, does the old guy deserve a send-off? And if he does, what do you think it should look like? Is it just with the team, a ceremony at the beginning of every game that he plays? Do you feel that, you know, his career rises up to a need for that kind of, you know, appreciation?
We're talking about JT here. I think what he'd appreciate most is just going quietly. You know, just a little fan salute, maybe a solo lap of the First Niagara Center after his last game. That, I think, is about all that he'd ask for. He's a really humble guy. You know, he's not the type of guy that wants a lot made of him. He's not big on that sort of thing. I think, you know, he'd much prefer a small parting gift than a massive ceremony and a blowout and all the dignitaries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think he'd rather just take one last lap around the First Niagara Center, wave at the fans, and be on his merry.
But don't you think that he owes it to the fans and the game to allow himself to be shown to be a great example of a career that deserves being noted?
Oh, granted. I mean, I think he should get everything. I think there should be a ticker tape parade to Wobblestone and Pearl Street Grove.
How much, in other words, I guess what I'm asking, and I'll ask it of all three of you guys, how much should we force on him for his own good? Because in my opinion, you know, it's the old story about what shoulda, coulda, you know, you don't want to be there. You know, maybe I should have get, like, I don't want to see him in his retirement go, you know, maybe I should have, you know, because God knows there will be a lot of people that come up to, well, you know, I was looking forward to saying hi to you and cheering for you. Why didn't those people do something special for you? And he's going to say to himself, gosh, I'm the one who stopped it. Listen, every decent piece of work needs to be appreciated. And sometimes the people who appreciate get as much as the person who's appreciated. And down the road, I'd like to think that we could be a part of making great memories for him, no matter how embarrassing. You know, how many times have you heard somebody say, no, I don't want a surprise birthday party, and then they don't have it, and you almost sense that they're disappointed? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess, but, you know, then there are people who say, I don't want a surprise birthday party, and you throw one for them, and they really don't enjoy it.
I guess
so, you know.
We'll leave that subject there. So party maker beware, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's only so much somebody would be willing to put themselves through, I guess. And for something like that, I'm not sure if JT would really appreciate that.
That's too bad. And you know, I really like the guy, and it would be great if his nephew would come out and, you know, hand him something. I think it'd be great. You know, everybody talks about him being an uncle, and you know, a great career, and if I ever get a chance to shake his hand, I'll let him know how much he's, how humble a fan he made me by the hard work and the great career that he's strung together. It's a wonderful career, and congratulations to him. And you know what? If that's enough for him, then that's great. I just hope, you know, sometimes, you know, you give him a little bit more, and they will appreciate it. I think he would appreciate a little bit more than nothing. Let me put it that way. How's that? Is that...
No.
You know, a little more than nothing, at least. You know, even though he's saying nothing, I'd give him a little bit more than nothing, and I think he'd be full value for it. Now, he has an opportunity here, you know, with his team to go up against Rochester, and the team will be motivated and confident because of two important reasons. they've played their worst lacrosse they can this year. They can convince themselves into believing, accordingly can convince them, that they have played the worst lacrosse they could possibly play this year. Well, guys, all we got left are the good parts of our game. And do you think there's enough there for them on that team and what we saw against the Rock to upset Rochester? You want to go
first, Gary?
I
personally don't think there's enough there. I think Rochester's too deep. I think Rochester's too well-rounded. I think Rochester's too veteran to fall into some of the traps. But that's just me.
I don't want to see Rochester three-peat. That's pretty much all there is to it.
I don't either, but you know what? I just don't think Buffalo's the one that's going to knock them down. I think somebody from the West is.
Well, I'll be honest with you this year. I really want to see Edmonton take it all because I think they've had a type of season that deserves it. So.
Well, I agree. They've been the class of the league all year, and it would be a shame if they didn't.
Rocco?
I picked Rochester to go ahead and three-peat. As much as I would, if I speak from a Wing fan standpoint, I don't want to see anybody three-peat before we do, just as well as, like, you know, Adam, you guys don't want to see anybody three-peat until the Rock do it. You know, Rochester put themselves in an elite class by winning two in a row. Not that many teams have done it, and not that many teams have had the opportunity to win three in a row. Rochester had at least two chances for it, and if it wasn't for the Wings winning in 2001, they could have had a chance of winning five in a row.
Wow.
Figure the Rock won it in 99 and 2000.
And
the
then
Wings
2003.
And the Wings won up in Toronto in 2001.
Yep, that
so
would have
Toronto
been a five.
Could have been five in a row. I mean, that could have been something that we would still be talking about. And who knows what would have happened, you know, at that point. But I see Rochester, I won't say picking apart Buffalo in this first game. It's going to be a tough game. But I see them beating Buffalo, coming out on top. Buffalo's probably going to try to get under their skin a bit. I think Rochester is just a little bit too disciplined for this. And then, you know, next week they'll go to Rochester, and I think Rochester will just take care of business. They won't even need that 10-minute game.
Yeah, plus you can negate the Priolo and Singh factors just with, you know, both Dawson's in size and strength that's not going to be an issue this time around.
No.
They're not going to be pushing around the offense.
I think I'm going to take just a contrary position for the sake of taking a contrary position. I think it's another game where Buffalo has nothing to lose. And just the what we've just discussed, all those things, the three-peat, finishing first, you know, looking past Buffalo to Edmonton or Calgary, I think Rochester's primed to lose. Now, it's going to require Buffalo, you know, getting the kind of goaltending that they've gotten this year from Cosmo, and also the kind of discipline, for the most part, they showed against the Rock, you know, and maybe it'll happen. But I kind of, realistically, I don't think it's possible, but mostly because they're not going to have the advantage of winning every face-off in the second half. And that was a large contribution to their victory against Toronto. But, you know, I do believe that Rochester could be caught looking ahead and or thinking three-peat. And, you know, Buffalo, you know, I think they dodged a bullet. And they almost, you know, the destiny thing starts to kick in their case because, you know, they played so horrible at the end of the year and turn things around so quickly in one game, however fortunate you want to call it.
Well,
they could very
Mike
well ride that.
For keeping their team focused, I don't think he's going to let that three-peat or any other stuff get into their heads. And if it does, he's going to straighten them out very quickly. He's been around a number of years as well, so he knows how to get his team straightened out quickly.
So it's 3-1. is what we're saying here.
Yeah.
Maybe
or,
even 4-1.
Yeah, I mean,
that.
or 3.5 to 1.5, because I'm saying Buffalo, but I do have, you know, my doubts, you know. And especially because of what you said, Gary, you're 100% right. The one thing that Rochester has is this trait that we saw all year in all the games that they played. When they need to turn it on, they can. And that's the toughest part that Buffalo's going to have to deal with. You know, Rochester this year came out of the gate kind of slow, but I attribute that to being a defending champion. And Rocco, they have been, you know, they've gotten the goals they needed when they need them. They've gotten the saves when they needed them. And they've played the defense they need when they need it most. They've been a very good team.
I'll go one step further for you, Frank. And when Vince isn't on his game, you have Angus Goodleaf who can come in and be on his game, as proven in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So they even have that little tight net, a little net for the tightrope.
Best backup in the league?
I would say he's one of the best backups in the league. I'd say he could be a starter in some cities.
I was about to say, if he wasn't a backup, he'd be starting.
Rocco, are you there?
Yeah, I am. I was trying to think of the teams that he could, you know, what other team has a backup that can compare to Goodleaf? I mean, you look through the teams in the East, okay, you have Toronto. Now you have Miller and Rose, so, okay, you can compete with that. Philly, we don't really even have a backup. If you want to call Crosswell a backup, I wouldn't. I'm sorry, I wouldn't. I mean, he was only in that last game because Evan Kirk from what I understand, a very bad stomach virus that he had from the week before. That's why Billy McGlone was the backup in that game out in Vancouver, up in Langley. But, yeah, you look through it. I mean, Minnesota, they have Higgins and Carlson. Both of them are having a hard time just trying to figure out who's going to be their starter. Colorado, you got Bellinger and Dylan Ward. Edmonton, you got Aaron Bold, and you know his backup's Brody McDonald. Okay, you haven't seen that much of McDonald in the net in the last, what, 2-3 years.
Well, same thing with Calgary with Gigliano and Poulin, right?
No, right. Yeah, so, I mean, who do you know, you could say that, you know, between Toronto and Rochester, they have, you know, two of the best, you know, 1-2 combinations.
And that may be important, you know. And some might suggest, and it sounds to me like, you know, going back to Toronto, that it might have been a more clever ploy. And in fact, Gary and Aaron, were we not under the impression that Rose was going to start?
No, actually, I thought myself that they played Rose against Buffalo so as not to give them a free look at Miller. A couple of weeks ago.
How about you, Aaron?
No, I was under the impression that I would have thrown Rose back in just based on what happened the previous week, just to mess with their heads. You know, because you have a capable guy in Miller to if you need to take him out. So that would
have things go south, you've got a guy.
Exactly. Just to mess with their heads.
Yeah, I understood, and maybe it was Jarrett that told me that they were going to start Rose. I heard they were going to start Rose, and then when the game came towards game time, all of a sudden Miller's playing goal, and I'm going, wait a second. Were they just trying to, again, play with the other team's head by suggesting and putting early word out that Rose was going to be in? I might have started Rose for the same reasons that you said, Aaron, that he beat Buffalo, you know, and I think, I don't know, just like, I guess, he was the guy that played for the team most of the year. Miller came in and did a great job of helping to right the ship. But as much as Miller deserves the credit for the righting of the ship, you know, as we discussed on this program weeks before, some of the veterans, a veteran came back, the team defensively got healthier. Some new blood came in that, like Dachenko, that worked out. And you know, it was, you know, a cumulative thing. It wasn't just, you know, Miller coming in, which, in a way, reflected badly on Rose at face value, but if you look at it deeper, you'll go, well, you know, Rose didn't have the same kind of defense in front of him that Miller did. So it might not have hurt to put Rose in, but, you know, it didn't, if ands or buts, right? It was an interesting decision on the coach's perspective. Now, for you guys, we talk about Buffalo and Rochester being a great matchup. Let's go over to the West, and it is halftime in the show. Let's go over to the West, where Calgary, Rocco, I'll start with you. Calgary just about, well, maybe we should say the Mammoth almost stole the game last week.
Yeah, that was, when we talked about that, I kind of went the other way. I said, you know, Calgary's probably going to win, but I see Colorado most, you know, probably, you know,
squeaking right.
This one out. And they almost did. And you look at it and, okay, they were without Drew Westervelt in that game, the Mammoth. Sure, one player, you know, doesn't make a team, but without his presence out there on the floor, anything could have, you know, happened, you know, in that game. I mean, you had – I'm looking at the score sheet – and you had a 3-2 game going into the second quarter, and the teams combined for 14 goals, and then another 9 in the third quarter. So you had 23 goals in the middle 30 minutes. So 30 minutes of action, you had 23 goals. Where was the defense?
it was run and gun, by definition, I guess, in that middle part of the game.
Yeah.
That was an attempt at war of attrition. I think they were trying to see who could put the most points up first. And, I mean, Calgary was shooting at a 58% rate, and Colorado was shooting at a 50% rate. So, like, that's insane. I'm not sure where these goals were coming from, but, man, they made the goalies look beer league.
And, I mean, you look at it, it's a one-goal game, and, I mean, you could, you know, always turn to this and say, no, it doesn't always work that way, but Calgary goes 3-for-5 on the power play. Colorado goes 1-for-3. They lose by 1. And I believe Calgary had a couple shorthanded goals in this game, and so did Colorado. Looks like they each had 1 or 2 apiece. So that kind of, you know, I guess wipes out my theory of, you know, on the power play goals and everything, but, you know, when the teams are just going, just doing a run and gun, as you say, it's, you know, somebody's going to come out, you know, on top. But you get Sean Evans with 4 goals and 5 assists, including the game winner, Dane Doby, an 8-point night with 4 goals, and Curtis Dixon with 3 goals. Right there is 11 of your goals. On Colorado's side, Adam Jones had 5, and then Iannucci and Grant with 2 apiece. And then the other goal scorers were only single goal scorers. Yeah,
spread
Sean Pollock
pretty
only.
Good.
Oh, yeah, Sean Pollock only had 1 goal. Where, you know, usually he can get 2, you know, 2 or 3 there. I mean, you know, just, you know, certain players were just shut down, and you look at it where, okay, maybe if Drew Westervelt was healthy in that game, would we have been looking at a different outcome?
There's a good chance that that's true, but, you know, it doesn't matter today because it doesn't change
right.
What happened yesterday, right? But, yeah, the point is well made and well taken. You know, every team, the same could be said, you know, up until, well, you know what, I'm not going to go back to the Rock, but you've said something here that Garrett Billings, same thing with the Rock. They survived without him for that playoff push, but it seemed to me more than ever in that one game, they needed him more in that one game than they needed him in the last 4 or 5. And that's what makes a player of that caliber that we're talking about a difference. They're difference makers for teams at times when they need them most. And you notice them when they're absent, when the team is unable to overcome their absence. But still, Calgary stood up considering the difference in the standings and the records of the year, the Mammoth really has been coming on, and it isn't a surprise to anyone. As we talked on Saturday on your show, it wasn't surprising to me that the Mammoth would put up that kind of fight, and they did. But why did they do it? Anybody want to give me a reason, maybe a number one reason why they did so well against Calgary, considering their record?
You know what? Colorado is a team that's been in this league for 28 years, okay? They're just as old as a franchise as the Philadelphia Wings are. They're old school. They will fight to the bitter end. It's kind of like if you relate it to football and you see the Eagles and the Cowboys or with hockey, if you put two teams that are going to be rivals. You can be 0-15 or 0-17 and play this team only once a year, and it's going to be, tooth and nail. It's just going to be to the very end. It may take one overtime, may take three overtimes, and it'll be one of those classic games, and that's how it's always been in the West. It's been that way in the East. You see the Wings and Buffalo play. It's always going to be a bang 'em out type of game. Colorado and Calgary, you're going to have that. They have that history between each other. You have the Snyder brothers, one on each side. They both have great goaltending right now going through their system. You're going to have that type of a battle. Like I said, you have an old school team in Colorado. They kept it that way since they moved out there from Washington. They're going to have that old school fight to them, and with Steve Govett as the GM, that's how it's going to be. Because remember, Govett was a Philadelphia Wing player, so he knows when it comes down to it, what it's all about.
Well, so the history of the team is something that buoys the team. We're waiting here in Toronto for that to happen with the Rock. Calgary has, they're buoyed by the fact that they're associated with an NHL team, just like the Colorado Mammoth. They're both directly connected to both NHL franchises, Colorado, of course, the Avalanche, and the Mammoth in lacrosse, and, of course, Calgary, the Flames in hockey, the Mammoth in lacrosse. So they have the preparation and or the ability to practice and or to have the physical preparation that's required. Edmonton is not associated with the Oilers, are they?
Not that I know of.
I'm pretty sure they aren't. And they have had the kind of year. This is a team that blanked everybody. You know, I think 14 in a row they went? Or was it 15?
14.
It was 14, right? And then they lost one or two, and then they won another one, and I think they finished with, 15-3? I'm not looking at the stats.
16-2?
Okay, thank
16
you.
16-2.
Thank you, guys. They played really well all year, and the only chink in their armor was the Calgary team. How much
and
of an
Colorado.
Impact?
Colorado beat them, too.
In Colorado.
Colorado was the first one to beat them, Frank.
Right. Yeah. But the point I'm trying to make is the team that they're meeting is Calgary. And, it just so happens that, yes, both those – either of those teams would have come into this game with the same, motivation that they beat this team, so they knew they could do it. And the same is true for the Edmonton team. They know that Calgary can beat them. Calgary's going to have to do now – to go into Edmonton after their home game and win that second game, assuming they win the first so they don't have to go to the tiebreaker. In these 2.4 or 2.25 games that they're going to be playing possibly, what is going to be the difference maker for Calgary in beating Edmonton? And then we'll talk about Edmonton beating Calgary. Rocco, what do you think Calgary has to do?
I'm looking at the games when they played each other. Edmonton won 3 out of 4, okay, which means they won both of the games at the Scotiabank Saddledome, and I'm trying to see where the first meeting won there. And they lost 15-7 and 15-11 at home to Edmonton in the two meetings there, but they won the last game 14-13. So they eked out a one-goal win, but...
It was an overtime win.
Right, in Edmonton.
If you look at the Colorado one, actually, the week before in Edmonton, they almost beat them, and then they did beat them in Colorado. So actually, Colorado matched up better. But to answer your question, Frank, I think the biggest thing Calgary has to do is get Edmonton off their game. If they try and play with them, well, Edmonton's a master playing that game. And they're going to have to use the Sean Evans effect and a few other guys in there as well and just try and get them a little bit off of their game and let their forwards start putting the ball in the net.
Gary, thank you. Aaron?
I'm just hoping for a really solid game. That's really it. You know,
what's it going to take to be a solid game then?
Everything firing. Obviously, everything is going to have to be firing at the same time. You can't have Doby trying to light it up by himself, but Shatler taking the night off. On the other side of the coin, if Edmonton doesn't have Church and Conway and Matthews going and Bold on top of his game, that's going to be an issue. These teams, though, because it's going to be a battle of Alberta, I don't think either side is going to have any issue in getting up and fully prepared for this game. So, I mean, I'm just going to kick back and flip on TLN and just watch them go at it. I mean, this game, the drama is going to write itself. And
also remember, it's the fifth and sixth times they're going to see each other this year.
Yeah.
They're familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, and they've developed a real hate on for each other, as it should be.
Oh, yeah. They're pretty familiar with each other.
Yep.
And that's the question. This will be a big deal in Alberta, won't it?
It should be huge. I mean, that's all that really can be said about it. This should be the biggest sporting event going. Seeing as
after the years that the Canadian hockey teams in Alberta had, being Edmonton and Calgary, the futility that they displayed this year in hockey, I mean, it gives something for, you know, those two cities, you know, because they have hate on each other in every sport, whether it be hockey, football, and lacrosse. They have hate on. You know, in football, Edmonton is a non-combatant, if you will, when it comes to having a good season. So this is the first and only time this year that, up until now anyway, that Edmonton and Calgary literally have, and Edmonton has the edge, you know, to have city bragging rights. I can imagine the mayors now are going full tilt against each other, and they have something that the locals will be very excited about. This will be a great game to watch, you know, in Edmonton.
And this actually comes to not on the field, but in the front offices, is how well is this thing going to be marketed between the two cities? How much interest is going to be generated to the regular Joes out there who really don't know? And how much city pride can you get from people who don't know to get their butts in the seats? Then you have something going on.
Well, it's our experience that the media never misses an opportunity to follow a team that's winning locally. You know, as little information that's out there for The Rock when they're playing so-so. When they're doing well, you know, we saw LeBlanc at the Blue Jay game throwing out the first pitch, you know, so people become aware of them when the team is doing well. And the media likes to, you know, it's a good news story, right? It's a
Edmonton,
you know,
to go 14-0 before Edmonton's Sun actually picked them. So, again, is somebody dropping the ball marketing-wise? I think so. This is the time when they need to really... Every day in the paper, this should be first thing on the lips of everybody if they want to have themselves a real big-time crowd coming and have some real heated crowds.
Other than minor league soccer and, minor league baseball, there really is, I can't see them not promoting this to the hilt. It should be a big deal because this game will determine which team will have a 50-50 chance of winning one of the nicest trophies in sports.
Well, I agree, but again, we're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, no, but we're also talking to people who are interested in lacrosse, and sometimes, you know, there's a little more work to be done in different sports by different fans. You know, lacrosse is, you know, it is the game that the fans and the players are like they're on the same team. You know, a Rocco in lacrosse is a wonderful thing because of how he feels about his team, and I know how his team feels about him and those like him. You know, I'm not suggesting that football, baseball, and hockey in Philadelphia takes their fans for granted. That is not what I'm saying. But I don't think there's a sport like lacrosse where the players have an affinity to their fans. Isn't that a fair statement, Rocco?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, you know, about how, you know, it's time for, you know, the media to kind of jump on, you know, I guess you say jump on the wagon. You know, as what, you know, so they, the Edmonton Press didn't kind of jump on the team until they were, what, 14-0.
Right.
Okay, now they're going to ride the coattails, and should Edmonton falter, it gives them more fuel to say, oh, this is why we didn't follow them in the beginning of the year. We knew this was going to happen. You know, they bring our hopes up, and now they're dashed, which tells me, obviously, that some of the media probably out there in Edmonton doesn't know, like what I like to say, diddly squat about the game of lacrosse, probably. You know, whoever's writing it may not know about it.
But the thing that I don't like, and the thing that I'm hearing here, and it's disappointing to say the least, there's nothing more you know, pride building than having a sporting franchise be successful. I have yet to see where there's not a spike in city pride, civic pride, when a team does well. And to suggest that Edmonton is missing the boat on this, or even Calgary, who are sitting a little further on the outside of the equation by virtue of their record, you know, and the same is true in Rochester and Buffalo. It's a missed opportunity by a city because, well, let's face it, everybody loves a winner.
Winner.
And it seems kind of sad that when there's a, you know, there are a lot of cities in the world that would love to have a winner, even in lacrosse, if I can say it that way, as demeaning as that sounds. You know, having a winner in your city is a great reason to celebrate, a great reason to have a party, you know. I turned it an inglorious age this year, and it was a good excuse to have a party. And that's all there is to it. You may not like the reason you're having the party, but a party's a party. And it saddens me to think that if in Edmonton and any of the four cities that are left to decide who will be the champion, if there's not party planning in all four of those cities, I would be very disappointed.
I know what Buffalo was planning, because Buffalo even had viewing parties in the bars of watching the Rock game, even though it was only on TLN. They found a way to put it on the big screens in their regular pregame and postgame party bars. So
Rochester even had a viewing party.
Yeah, Rochester, you know, is going to have the stock, and they're going to have the game on.
Oh yeah,
Weekend also. Don't you despair.
Yeah, I mean,
but you know, I'm curious why I brought it up. Is somebody in either front office dropping the ball or missing an opportunity to get the casual fan, or someone who doesn't even know he's a casual fan yet, he, she, them, it, by not advertising this all over the place for a week, for 1 week? Just put it out there, and let's see what happens.
Even here in Toronto, when the Argos made the Grey Cup, not to suggest they're comparable, and I'm not daring to suggest that. I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just the point I'm going to make is that the level of excitement that was generated by the media in Toronto when they were in the 2012 Grey Cup was accelerated by eons. You know, we went from a city that barely talked about the Argonauts to that's all you heard. And that's all part of civic pride. And that is what I'm talking about. And there's a, you know, there is so much to be proud of when it comes to franchises doing well. And it's an excuse for people to wear jerseys with the city's name on it with pride. We here in Toronto just saw what happened with the Raptors. You know, it was, you know, a basketball rapture. I mean, it was. Like, people were totally, for a week and a bit, were totally enthralled with each game. They were informed about each game, and it was fun. It was fun watching, you know, people in the city excited. And as I said, a missed opportunity if any of these four cities don't do the best they can, you know, to share in the excitement. And this isn't about being an NHL fan. This is about being a civic pride fan. I'm a very civic pride fan. I love my city. And any excuse for us to party, to me, is a good excuse, as far as I'm concerned. And I see Edmonton and Calgary having an excellent opportunity to celebrate something, as do Buffalo and Rochester. You know, and it's, you know, the ironic part here is that the two local enemies are meeting each other on each side, east and west. What other opposition would you want if you're in Rochester and you're a fan of Rochester than Buffalo, and the same true in reverse there, as it would be on the western side? What team would Edmonton prefer to meet? What team would Calgary prefer to meet? I mean, these will be storied semifinals for the championship. Finals for the East, finals for the West, but semifinals for the championship. This is written, you know, the story is written for excitement, and I'd be very disappointed if all four of these cities didn't buy into it as quickly as possible. The storyline is awesome. I mean, don't you guys think the storyline's awesome? I mean, what team would Buffalo and Rochester, their fans, prefer to meet than those two teams?
Oh, sure, you got the biggest rivalries in both East and West. But again, if it's kept a secret, aren't we missing something here?
I exactly. And I can't believe that we'll actually miss something. And you know, maybe a review of the game is when it'll start. You know, when one of the cities is determined as the representative, the Alberta representative or the New York State representative, because, you know, it's upstate New York.
Alone the Canada versus U.S. thing.
Yeah, it's going to be, exactly, it's going to be upstate New York against Alberta, Canada, upstate New York, USA. The winner, you know, it's as regional a battle on each side as
alone east versus west, and it goes on and
yeah.
on, right?
Yeah, the storyline.
There's a number of angles that if you're a marketer, you could go to town on. Why am I not seeing this all over the place?
Well, how do you know you're not seeing it, Gary? I'm sorry. I'm just curious about what you're basing your commentary on.
Oh, I'm Googling.
What's missing?
I'm looking at the newspapers. I'm not saying it blindly. You know, I'm taking a look daily, at least online, of everything coming out of Edmonton, and I'm not seeing anything.
Well, there was an article actually posted today in the Edmonton Sun. If you go to edmontonsun.com, and click on sports and lacrosse about Bruce Irvin and finally turning a profit. There was an article also on the Saturday after the game was done, so that would have been the third in the Calgary Sun. Both of them I've actually just put up on Facebook, so if you wanted to check those out, those are available as well. There's not as much coverage as I think there should be.
And in a regular newspaper where you don't have that lacrosse thing to click on?
Yeah, that's going to be an issue.
It's not there.
No, and, I mean, if you go to the Star or if you go to any of the other local papers, other than the ones that are actually contracted out and potentially sponsors, and again, that's the Sun because they sponsor them in pretty much all the cities, you're not going to find that. And that's either A, not putting the money in to buy a story or to get column inches, or B, the other papers, for some reason, just don't think a battle of the Alberta of Alberta in a different sport is noteworthy. I mean, I'm pretty sure if Edmonton and Calgary had tiddlywinks teams, it would make the papers too. just because
well,
that's
and what you're
Alberta
getting at
is, but
is
this
that
is
the
good.
NHL
this is
teams were meeting in the playoffs, it would be a big deal.
Yeah, but this is marginally disappointing. And when I say marginally, I'm using it to mean huge.
It is huge because you're probably going to catch the local high school swim results, but you're not going to catch anything about the National Lacrosse League and
yeah.
the Battle of Alberta, which to me, something's not right here.
Well, you know, this is a bigger story. And Rocco, I don't know what it's like in the U.S., but here in Canada, TSN has scaled back their broadcasting on television of games in the National Lacrosse League. They shrunk to, I think, a grand total of 5 games this year, or am I exaggerating? Or
there were 5
games
Ross games, but there were also 5 away games. So
what, they broadcast 10 games this year, TSN did?
Just like they did last year. They broadcasted 10 last year, but there was more of a focus on the Rock last year. This year it was more spread out. There were 5 Rock games.
Which is fine.
5 others.
I didn't think there were that many.
Is losing all their hockey. Like, what are they going to do? They're going to show, how many times are they going to show the World Series of Poker?
That's what's got me wondering here, because, you know, Rogers owns the Blue Jays, and Rogers now has hockey, so that means that TSN is left with what?
Series of Poker. And darts.
Darts.
They have the CFL, and they have, TSN has, they have, I guess they have nothing left. Did they not have? Do they not still have some of the Leaf games, local games?
Rogers has them all. That's in the contract. As of the end of this season, they have none.
Well, I think TSN should consider making sure a team comes to Hamilton because that's their best shot. That's my axe that I keep grinding, and I won't grind it here, guys. Trust me. I'd like to, but I won't.
You're perfectly welcome to go ahead and grind it. I just don't think anybody's listening.
Or cares.
I'd love to see a team in Hamilton. Are you kidding me? I'd love to see a team in Richmond Hill. That would be awesome.
I would even go for Kitchener. I might make the 45-minute drive.
Oh, hell yeah.
But I just happen to think that Hamilton's better because of the GO train and such, that it's already on, you know, good travel grounds, you know. Even somebody,
transit accessibility is a definite must. I mean, if you want to draw anybody in.
Even somebody from Oshawa.
Pretty sure they just finished the 401 to Kitchener, though, didn't they?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, even coming on the GO train from Oshawa, that's only about an hour.
No, that's true. I mean, it's, I don't know. I'm bewildered as to the politics of the NHL. I'm not 100% sure how that's all really supposed to work.
We're talking to bring it to the National Lacrosse League. We're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
The people that could make a difference don't. You know, and that's what we've been talking about, to bring it back to lacrosse. You know, everything is, you know, and Rocco, help me with this, because people in Philadelphia are pretty hysterical once in a while. And hysterics is what runs sports. Do you know what I mean? Like it's the infectious desire to be part of the group that's cheering for that team. There's no explanation as to how it happens. It just does. And then once it does, there's no explanation for what it takes to destroy the interest. Once a city grasps a team or an organization, you know, they'll follow anything that team does. You know, we can talk about the Wings, for example. How much patronage takes place of the Wings historically? In other words, people year after year just have developed the desire to follow that team and they continue to follow it. Or are they transient fans that follow the team in Philadelphia?
You have your fans that have always followed this team. I mean, yeah, you're talking about the Wings.
Yes, sir.
The press, they very rarely follow them. You may see a blurb here and there, maybe prior to the game and a little post-game write-up after. The Wings go out and they do their PR to promote the game on, you know, the local radio stations. You know, they're always on the local radio stations on, you know, the day before the game or the day of the game. Like, they'll be there on Friday morning if there's a Friday night game and, you know, things like that, or on the weekend. So they're putting the word out. But you know, when you're talking about Philadelphia, this is mainly a four major sports city. You know, the hockey, the baseball, basketball, and football. It's mainly known as a football town.
Right.
They get the Philadelphia Union, the soccer team, somehow
yep.
are getting a lot of press. I don't know how. I really don't. The Philadelphia Soul, the arena football team, yeah, they're getting a lot of press and people talking about them for a couple reasons. Their owners were John Bon Jovi and Ron Jaworski, former Philadelphia Eagle quarterback. Big name sports figure.
John Bon Jovi?
Yes, he was part owner of the Philadelphia Soul when it first started.
Is he still a part owner?
No, he's busy trying to get the Buffalo Bills to come to Toronto.
No, that's what I was just going to, you know, are you aware of that, that he wants to bring the Bills to Toronto?
Yeah, how many NFL players would be unable to play because of criminal records?
Ouch.
See, that's just
I don't like that implication.
Right,
I really don't like that implication. That,
well,
you know,
there's a reason why people call it the National Felons League.
No,
yes.
That's what you call it, and that's not nice, and that's not fair.
I call it the
No-Fun
League.
No-Fun League works for me.
That's the one we use here. As CFL fans, we refer to it as the No-Fun League. And in fairness to the NFL, and if you cut a swath through society, I think you'll find that there are as many morons in the NFL as there are in society, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, to expect because guys get millions, you know, make millions and millions of dollars that they're going to be great people now is ridiculous to assume that. It isn't going to happen. People are what they are, and you take any group, any segment of society, and you cut a swath through them, they're going to have a bit of everything in that group. So, no, I don't approve with that. Aaron, I know you're kidding. I know you're having fun, but I just want to make sure that my name's on this program, and I want people to know that I don't believe in that. I don't believe that you can point at a segment of society and say, yeah, that's where all the turds are. No, you can't do that. It's just not right. But, you know, you can say it. I'm just telling you from my perspective as the host of this program that I disagree with you.
But for the record, I say it. I don't mean it.
Okay, good. Then we're all on the same page. And you know, there is stuff that's attributed to the NFL and to sports in general. You know, these are problems that come with the publicity. I'm sure, and I'm not trying to disparage the National Lacrosse League, but if people followed the National Lacrosse League to the same extent that they follow the NFL, I'm sure there would be the odd guy that's run afoul of the law, and we'd hear about it. But fortunately, in this case, the game isn't that popular that they have a microscope on them. And that's because they don't make near as much money as NFL players do. So let's put everything in perspective, and let's get back to the order of the day, which is lacrosse and the great game that it is, and how big a miss there is in society when it comes to this game and the entertainment value that this game provides. In Philadelphia, we were talking about, Rocco, about your team and about the fact that, again, it sounds typical of what goes on in the National Lacrosse League, we're learning, in Toronto. In Toronto, what happens is they actually advertise during NHL games. They advertise the National Lacrosse League, the Toronto Rock in particular, during Leaf games. They advertise that the games are taking place, and you can buy tickets at, you know, torontorock.ca. So there
okay,
is...
now I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question now. You're at the ACC for a hockey game.
Yes, sir.
Are the Rock banners still hanging down, or are they
rolled
them up?
Nope, they're rolled up. They're taken out.
Yeah. Same here in Philly. The banners are rolled up, and they're not even in the mix with, like, the Flyers and the Sixers banners. They're at the far end. Okay.
With the Rock banners.
Oh, even when you see them, even when you're able to see them, they're still far, far away to be seen in the background.
Right. But yet in Philly at the Wells Fargo Center, they still have a banner scrolled out for Bruce Springsteen and one for Billy Joel for the number of sold out shows.
Do you want to hear
Joel
something funny?
I mean,
yes.
Seriously,
you
mean, come
hear,
on.
You want,
we have
like,
a Bon Jovi banner sitting in ACC too that's out there all the time.
No, but that's part of the kiss me please, because I'll bring you an NFL team. That's just the MLSC's way of sucking up to Bon Jovi, because Bon Jovi's willing to work with MLSC to get an NFL franchise here. Or Rodgers, however you want to put it. You know, and Bon Jovi's a great act, don't get me wrong. All right, he deserves the accolades that he gets. He's a hard-working, a hard-working entertainer that deserves, you know, he works very hard. So, you know, congratulations. The same thing with Bruce Springsteen. Now, if only these guys would help support the National Lacrosse League, what would it take to get Bruce Springsteen to promote the National Lacrosse League? Should we teach him how to use it? Yeah, there you go.
A team in Asbury Park.
There you go.
They already had a team in New Jersey. They moved to Anaheim, appeared on the second episode of House, and then disappeared. Damned Anaheim Storm.
See how Aaron has all these little tidbits of information at his fingertips? Isn't it awesome, the fact that
New York Titan, Orlando Titan, No More Titan game, right?
First it was the Saints, then it was the Titans, then it was No More Titans. God, they thought they were going to appeal to the retiree crowd there. That was a mistake. Columbus Landsharks, that was awesome. Loved their jerseys.
Charlotte Cobras.
Fire, the Bulls, the Wave.
What about New York? New York had a team for a very short time.
Well, they had, the New York Saints, and the Saints were actually there for quite a while.
Yeah,
their mascot was a big, shaggy St. Bernard with a lacrosse stick in his mouth. Tim O'Brien used to play for them before he came to play for the Toronto Rock. He used to have some great go-rounds between him and Big Dog. But then they folded for a brief while and came back under, was it Gongus as the Titans?
Yeah,
moved to Orlando. But was it no, Gongus had them when they were still the Saints. Sorry, there was a different ownership group that brought them back as the Titans.
When the Saints first started, it was the New York / New Jersey Saints.
Yeah, that's right. And they played
their
uniform.
That's what it had. Yes.
Oh. Sorry, what a hole. I hate to say it, but it's a historic arena, but it's a hole. I don't think they put more than $50 worth of repairs into that place in the past 30 years.
Yep.
And that was just to, rehang an exit sign.
You were talking about the old teams. You failed to mention the ever-popular Charlotte Cobras. 1 year, 0-10 and gone.
The Syracuse Smash, the Washington Wave,
the Almaty Attack,
Boston Blazers.
Montreal.
You had the Blazers twice, but the first time they were Team Gatorade.
I've got one of their jerseys, actually.
God. You go with all the classic teams that you had. I mean, the Mammoth ended up, before they moved out there, they were the Washington Wave. They started out as the Baltimore Thunder. And you mentioned the Pittsburgh Crossfire and everything. I mean, it's just the number of teams that have gone through this league.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, the problem is it's hard for them to gain a foothold. I mean, the brilliant idea was, let's start a team in Maryland and D.C. and field lacrosse hotbeds. And they basically got shut out by the field fans.
Yeah.
It's sad that there was that sort of a division. I think they're starting to come around a little more now. But, you had players that wanted to play field for Team USA in the Worlds this summer that refused to play for the Wings this winter.
The scheduling for the two leagues affords an overlap where players could play for both.
Well, that's the thing, though. The MLL decided that they were going to try to ban players from playing in the MLL if they played for the NLL. So you have these two leagues.
Well, you guys will be glad to hear this. I sent an email to the MLL media guy, and I told him we do a – so now I'm beginning to think that this guy probably burned the email, because I said to him, listen, we do a National Lacrosse League talk show, and now the season's winding down. I'm just wondering, how would you feel about us talking about your league?
Well, hey, the publicity can't hurt.
No. I've learned in this business, in the years that I've been in this business, spite is a main proponent in how you deal with people. Expect spite. It is a given. You know, and if they feel that they don't want to associate with something, with what you said right there, I expect no answer to my request at all. It'll just be filed under DARBAGE.
Let's see if you get a reply. I have hope.
I hope so.
That they might be
able
to. I
hope so because, you know, we want to continue talking about lacrosse, but you know, it doesn't end with the MLL. It also involves the OLA, which has many of the lacrosse players that Rocco, myself, and you two, you other two dudes, Gary and of course, Aaron, that we admire. These guys play in the Ontario Lacrosse Association. So, you know, there are other box lacrosse leagues that take over once the season's over in the National Lacrosse League.
Right.
And we can follow them and enjoy following them as much as we do the National Lacrosse League. While, you know, the pressure and or the familiarity with the teams may not be as, you know, as evident, but as quickly as you don't know a team, you can get to know a team real quick. So, yeah, we've got that. I promised Aaron that I would continue doing this kind of stuff, but I'm scared that Aaron's trying to weasel in soccer into the show. I'm really concerned about that. See how we laugh? Does that tell you that I know what I'm saying?
Frank, I just had a friend who wanted to get rid of a couple tickets. And
that's why you're inviting me, because a friend wanted to get rid of a couple of tickets. That makes me feel so fortunate.
What? I had to buy them. I'm not making you pay for them yet.
I hear you. I appreciate it. All kidding aside. The Ontario Lacrosse Association, once the season's done here, we're in our final minutes here. And Rocco, what other kind of lacrosse is taking place where you are once the season ends?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it. you got the NCAAs that are starting up. Okay, the NCAA tournament first round. Local team Drexel, who beat Hofstra for the Colonial Athletic title, is taking on their neighbor University of Penn in the first round Sunday. That's at Franklin Field. I'm going to be there covering the game.
Good for you.
So you got it's actually called the Battle of 33rd Street. Because if you go one direction on 33rd Street in Philadelphia, you're go towards Penn, University of Penn. You go the other way, you go towards Drexel University.
In
so
this
these two
house,
teams are going to...
Yeah, go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
These two teams are going to meet in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They also played earlier this past fall in a charity tournament for the Headstrong Foundation for blood cancer. They played each other in a charity game that really meant nothing, and it was really a good battle there. So this is like a continuation. So Drexel is going to be facing Penn in the first round. So that's going to be kind of like for bragging rights.
And do me another favor. Please give the webpage that you're associated with, the website that you're associated with. It's a lacrosse website, and I was checking it out, and I was thoroughly, thoroughly impressed by the devotion that your webpage that you're involved with has for the game of lacrosse.
The website's inlacrossewetrust.com. Marissa Angemi, who is the head of it all, she is she's not even 18 years of age. She runs the whole show. Obviously she's asked a number of people to, do articles, radio shows. She even has a few players that play in other lacrosse leagues do blogs and do game reports, as well. But she has it where everything is getting covered. Every possible lacrosse league gets out there, from CLACs to the MSL to the WLA, anything imaginable. If it's lacrosse-related, go there. Go to inlacrossewetrust.com. There's shows, radio shows that get played over on the podcast, everything that's on there.
It's fantastic, and I was totally impressed. And when you say she's 17, probably 17 going on 18. She's at her peak in internet savvy.
Right. And she started this
about three, four years ago. My kids have it all figured out. I thought I was smart, and I learned real quick I'm not. I've learned to ask questions of my children. They have all the answers.
But Frank, here's the thing. She started this when she was only like 13, 14 years old.
That's scary. That is scary. This is a network president in the making.
Yeah, and I've met her a number of times. She is very well knowledged in the game. She also does things for the Boston Red Sox, baseball related as well. So we just got a couple new sponsors. One of them is a sunglass company, and I cannot remember the name, and I apologize. They just sent us a number of
sunglasses. That's okay. They're not
sending
us anything, so the fact that you don't mention it doesn't hurt us at all.
But she's getting the sponsors, and most of us on this site are doing it for
free. I'd love to talk to her one day. She sounds like a brilliant young mind.
She is. She's very knowledgeable. One thing with the Drexel game, Ben McIntosh, who plays for Drexel, is a middie. He's out of Coquitlam, British Columbia. He is one of the top 10 prospects. He's in the top 10, according to IL Indoor, to be drafted in the first round.
Yes, in the MLL.
Yes. Well, no, in the NLL for next season.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me that it'd be both. But the NLL
But looking at the NLL draft, IL Indoor always does something way ahead of time. He's one of the top ten.
I'd like to talk about that right now. You brought up an interesting point that the reporter in me has a question, and Gary and Aaron, you're invited to answer this question. But I'll give you Rocco first crack at this. How competitive is it? Because of, obviously, the MLL, the Major Lacrosse League, which is the outdoor game, for those of you that are trying to follow what we're talking about, the NLL is the National Lacrosse League. So from now on, I'm going to refer to it as National as indoor, Major as outdoor. So just to keep everybody, how competitive is it between the Major and the National in drafting players, because you already stated that there is some consideration, or has it come to fruition, where Major players cannot play in the National League?
They don't say they can't play. This year they, you get a he said, she said story out of it. That the coach of
from
the
your simple
US
perspective,
team.
Your interpretation, you don't have to, you know, everybody who's listening, this is just Rocco's interpretation of the situation, best described as to his knowledge, right? And we're good.
Right.
Just your opinion, you know, of what your interpretation is.
I don't think there is. I think it's really up to the players. You know, a lot of the players like the outdoor game. If they never played the indoor game at all, they're going to stay with the outdoor.
Right.
Obviously, Ben McIntosh, being out of Coquitlam, he grew up with the indoor game. I had a chance to talk to him when they went up against Penn State a few weeks ago, and he can't wait to play the indoor game. He's looking forward to it.
Is it because, and can I put it around, can we score the card? Can we make the scorecard like this? Many of the Canadian players play box lacrosse. Very few of the American players play box lacrosse. Is that the theme, or am I overreaching?
Yeah.
No, you're dead on with that comment, Frank.
You're hitting the nail right on the head. That's why if you look at Johnny Moradian, the general manager of the Wings, he started the AIL Lacrosse League, American Indoor Lacrosse, building the kids to get used to the box game. To get American kids into, you know, not just the field game, but also to learn the box game as well.
Right.
Now, there's also been a trend in the OLA, and I think it's also in the BC Junior A Lacrosse League, that some American schools will actually send field players up to play in Ontario or in BC for the summer just so they can learn the game.
And they feel they can learn it better in box lacrosse.
Yeah, they
a lot of the players that I spoke to
have done that sort of thing have said is that they pick up the faster hands.
Yeah, yeah. It's not about better. I'm using the wrong term. It's just isolating
different skill sets.
Talents. Yeah, isolating talents that are good for the
it's going to make them better in close too.
Yeah, we have the same issue in my CFL show, where the discussion is about indoor football being great for defensive backs and receivers because of the proximity of the defenders. It helps you to learn how to catch passes in a closet, if you will. And I think I've just said the same thing that occurs when you play box lacrosse. The in-close coverage gives you more practice in avoiding in-close coverage and playing in the part of the game that is a closet. Even though for the most part it's a wide field and it's grass and there's lots of room, there is some in-close proximity play that is good to learn in box lacrosse.
Let alone the physical play, too. You're going to get a lot more physical play in box lacrosse than you are in field, but you are going to have those in-close things where there is contact. And the more
and
you learn
play within it,
is the easier it is to play outside or inside of it.
It's just another way of playing a game that helps you play the other game, you know. And it goes to show that there's a positive. It is positive reinforcement for the for box lacrosse that both those games need each other, because both those games exploit the talent of the players in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, there's carryover between both games. The ability to switch hands in field comes in very handy when it comes to box, and the ability to stick handle or play in a foam booth in box does come in handy occasionally in field. So, it's swapping skills and that sort of thing. I've noticed, though, a lot of the American players are absolutely stunned about how fast a game of box lacrosse can be as compared to a field game. And it's
it helps that it doesn't take you as long to get to the opponent's goal that much. It doesn't
that
take
and
long.
You're not chasing the ball.
Having an 8-second timeline doesn't hurt either.
There you go. So I think what we've discussed here today is we've opened a can of worms that I hope to investigate even further. And the can of worms is this: we have. Unlike, we like to think in hockey circles that a European rink is far different than an NHL rink. And there are idiosyncrasies that develop in the game based on the size of the ice surface. But the size of the surface in box lacrosse is far smaller than that in field lacrosse. Field lacrosse is the size of a football field, for people who may not be aware of what we're talking about. So we're not talking about adding 10 feet on the sides and 20 feet at the ends. We're talking about replacing an ice hockey rink with a football field. Is that a fair representation of the situation?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
definitely. I mean,
go ahead, Rocco.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, you got the extra, I mean, the size of it, I think it comes in just a little bit. I think it goes goal line to goal line as far as the nets go, I do believe. I may be wrong. I was going to try to look it up real quick.
Plus or minus, when you're talking about an extra 30, 40 yards, 10 feet here or there, who cares? You know what I'm saying? I'm with you.
Yeah.
We're together.
You have extra room on the sideline, so to speak, and there's a ton of room behind the net. So
a whole whack of
room. Yeah.
Almost a hockey rink behind the net.
Behind each goal, right.
Just behind the net a hockey rink.
Yeah.
There's so much that could go on behind the net. So much. So much. And the game is totally different. Needless to say, the ability to make much longer passes. Let's talk about I love talking about lacrosse, especially when it comes to the difference between box lacrosse and field lacrosse, because the talents you know, that help you to be successful in both the games are so different but similar at the same time, and it's scary. You know, the passes that are made in field lacrosse, folks, we're talking about football passes here, you know. The average pass in a field lacrosse, Rocco, what is it, 30 yards?
Whether you're going downfield or from side to side, yeah, it's at least a good 20 to 30 yards.
There you go.
I mean, some of these guys are doing it with 6-foot poles.
There you go.
You know, I mean, you got a defenseman using a 72-inch pole. That's 6 feet. I mean, and just letting it go and hitting their attackman in stride.
And box lacrosse sticks are under 4 feet.
4 feet, yeah. You still have those perfect passes, you know, but you got to be careful of the scoreboard that hangs down and everything else.
Yeah, no kidding.
You also have to thread the needle through 5 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while we're on this subject, how many guys are on the field on each team?
Indoor, I believe it's 11. There's 11 on
the outdoor. You said indoor, but
yeah, for the outdoor, I believe it's 11.
It's a lot
and
like
indoor
football.
Is like a hockey.
Indoor
team,
is six, including the goalies.
Six. Yeah.
They're both.
Yeah,
they both follow the pattern of games that play on those same size fields. Box lacrosse, hockey. And it sounds to me like field lacrosse follows the football. It's more of a Canadian game in lacrosse. We have 11. You have 12. No, sorry. We have 12. You have 11 in football.
but the thing is, though, the outdoor game has gotten a lot more physical, too, in the past few years.
And how does it get more physical with all the extra space that's out there?
Players are learning more contact. They're showing, you know, you're getting players that are playing tighter defense. You know, they're getting up on the guys.
So more like the European football, where you're getting the man-to-man coverage, and that man-to-man coverage is yielding a little bit of contact that can't be had in soccer or in European football.
And they're just on top of everybody. It's just, you know. They're finding out that the fans want to see more contact.
Well, that's where the box game takes.
Now, why, historically speaking, why field lacrosse? And remember, I'm not that brilliant when it comes to lacrosse history and stuff. But what I will say is that our game lacrosse, which was our national sport until a few years ago when Parliament decided to make sure that everybody understood that hockey was the winter sport and lacrosse was only the summer sport. The game of field lacrosse was attributed to the Aboriginals here. The natives played that game. Why is it in the United States you guys have hung on to that type of game, whereas the Canadians have gravitated to box lacrosse? Is it the weather? Is that the reason, the only reason? The availability of playing during?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you.
But
I would
you
like
notice
to see us get an outdoor team back.
Yeah, but why the difference? I'm just curious. You know what? We'll save that for another week. And I mentioned to Aaron that you wanted him on your show next week because I didn't do that good a job. And I understand that because, you know, I'm kidding. I will, at your invitation, and I spoke to Aaron, and I love your show, and I love your program, and I really appreciate, Rocco, your contribution here. And Rocco is, if you love lacrosse, you'll pay attention to what Rocco does. And Rocco, give the network that you're on again, the .com that you're on, so that our fans can enjoy your coverage of lacrosse.
The radio show, I normally do a show called The Wings Nest while the Philadelphia Wings are in action. That's normally on Tuesday nights at 6, but with them being obviously out of the playoffs, what I've done now is I've now do a show on Saturday afternoon at noontime Eastern. It's just called the NLL playoff, you know, playoff preview, day of the game. Discuss, you know, the matchups coming up. So this week, whether it's Frank or Aaron, whoever wants to join me this week, we will go ahead and recap last week's games and look at this week's games coming up this Saturday, where you're having Edmonton facing off against Calgary and Rochester and Buffalo battling each other, and see who's going to, you know, predict who may come out on top and what, you know, just like we did tonight, what needs to be done for each team to get a win. And then, you know, any other, you know, lacrosse, you know, items that may be, you know, known. People in, you know, the Philadelphia area that tune in, I'll probably just give, you know, a brief little synopsis of the Drexel-Penn game of, you know, what happened. Well, I won't be able to do that, excuse me, because that's happening Sunday at 3 o'clock. But
still preview it.
Kind of,
still preview it.
Yeah, I'll kind of do a little preview of that, promote that, you know, a good bit. But it's a very informative show. It's on inlacrossewetrust.com. You get, you know, go to the website. There's a link for Live 365. Click on it, and you have access to the show.
And I am more than a willing participant. And I know Aaron, if he can, he will be. Guys, we're all lacrosse fans. We love the game. And we do our part to make up for mainstream media's ignorance in not appreciating such a great game.
Hey, Frank, if I could say one thing, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Dylan Ward's goalie gear was found
and
returned to him today. Yeah.
Yes, I did. And it was amazing.
Homeless
you know,
yeah, homeless guy, and a fan bought it for $30.
Oh, from the homeless guy?
Yeah. From the homeless guy. Homeless guy sold
that
it to a guy. The guy's name was Dan Barnett. He bought it off a home. It has it right here. It said that he bought it off a homeless guy for $30. Yeah, it said bag of gear for $30 from a group that appeared to be homeless. And when
wow.
he realized what it was, he returned it to Dylan Ward.
And nice. Dylan Ward should be happy about that, because $30 is a price that pales by comparison if he had to replace it all.
Yeah. Well, according to Barnett, and I quote, Dylan Ward said, "Unbelievable. I can't thank you enough for this." That's what Ward said to Barnett, who returned it to him.
I think that's an incredibly adroit observation on your part that fits into what lacrosse is all about as far as the players, the teams, and the fans are concerned. We are a family.
I mean, you don't even know if this, you know, if Dan Barnett is a lacrosse fan, if he goes to any of the Mammoth games.
God forbid a Wings fan. Because, you know, if he wasn't a Wings fan, you never would have got that equipment.
Now, we would have returned it. I mean, but the thing is, the person who bought it, you don't know if he's ever even been to a Colorado Mammoth game.
There you go. It is such a great ending to a concerned story because it began with a player's equipment stolen, which is, you know, it's not about the money. It's just about, you know, we all know that when somebody steals something from us, it's a personal invasion that you feel like. You feel like you've been personally invaded. And it's an awful feeling. It's not about what you lost. It's about what you could lose in the future. It really shakes you a little bit. So I am totally glad and happy and grateful that there was a wonderful ending to this story. $30, guys, I think we can all agree, is small potatoes. In a
That's
situation.
An awesome price for a full set of goalie
right?
gear.
For the peace of mind of getting your stuff back, that's nothing.
Yeah, and the thing is, it said it was taken from outside his house.
Wow.
I wouldn't leave your equipment outside the house.
I got news for you. The way my stuff smells, I'm not bringing it in the house to dry.
It dries outside on the balcony, right, Aaron? Aaron, it dries out in the balcony, right?
Yeah, it dries out in the balcony. He may have had it on the porch for all
there,
we know.
That's
he
the
may
problem.
Have,
it's like, you know, it unfortunately is, you know, the common guy can walk across and just take it. But listen, it was a good ending to a story. We've gone over, but that's okay. Always willing to go over for Rocco, my buddy Rocco. And, of course, Aaron, thank you as usual, Aaron William Freeland. And there's nothing I can say more than, Gary, next week I want you to do the national anthem for us. We want to start the show with the national anthem. And and for those of you that don't know, that Gary Group sings the national anthem, and he has done it at a Raptors game as well. So, you know, the man has the talent to do it. He's a musical genius who happens to love the game of lacrosse. And I have to say that I'm grateful for that. And gentlemen, Philadelphia and Toronto are well represented in this show at this point. Yes, at some point I hope to have far more fans from different teams on this program. It took me 2 years to make the CFL show a program about more than the Argos and or Hamilton Tiger Cats. It has become more than that, and I hope that this program can become more than that, but it can't without someone out there that feels an affinity for either the Edmonton or Calgary teams that will be playing in the playoff, as will be the Rochester and Buffalo teams. So it's upstate New York battling out to decide who will represent upstate New York. And on the other side in the Western Conference will be the Alberta guys. Those guys will be deciding which team from Alberta will represent in the championship game. One thing I can assure you, both those games this weekend will be entertaining. And all you'll have to do to find out how entertaining they are, all you have to do is go to the Lacrosse Network on Facebook. And if that's too hard for you to figure out, go to National Lacrosse League, NLL.com, and they will give you the link that will send you to the game live. One from Edmonton, the other from Rochester, to determine who will meet in the championship final I think it's 2 weeks. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's the best 2 out of 2.25, whatever that means, Frank. But for those of you that are in lacrosse, you'll understand exactly what I said. So they'll be playing first in the home teams. The first home team game will be the team that is the visitor. And then there will be a game in the home team's floor, which will determine 2 victories. And if that doesn't happen, then a second victory will have to be made in basically a tiebreaker game that I think it's 10, 15 minutes. So it's going to be interesting, folks. I hope you'll tune in. And yes, we did go over, but we went over for good reason. We had Rocco on. And anytime we have Rocco on, it's good reason to go over. Yeah, Gary didn't sing the national anthem today. We'll get him to do it next week. And, of course, Aaron was wide awake for the whole show tonight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a tribute to his mastery of the show tonight. Aaron, thank you so much. And he didn't even have to feed his dog during the show. That in itself is a fantastic measure and achievement. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This, of course, has been Candid Frank Live Lacrosse Talk. The National Lacrosse League is what we talk about. We're here every Wednesday for your listening pleasure. Mondays and Fridays, the CFL. And this Friday, I have a very, very special guest. And because you lacrosse fans are here, I can tell you who our guest is going to be. And anyone who's listening to this better not tell anyone else. And I'm speaking to you four who are listening right now. The three in the room with me right now and the one person listening to the show. Khalif Mitchell's going to call. My buddy Khalif. We'll talk to you later. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.